Kind of hard when you're trying to sum up the career of our guest, Charles Ossman. I liked one thing I saw on his website, Infotech, Biotech, Nanotech. I think that does it. I also like the idea of the historian of the future. We're going to pull some threads of what's going on in the news right now, see where that leads us, and then kind of follow those into the future with a guy who does a little thinking about that, both professionally and personally. And we'll start a conversation next, which we were hoping to start a couple of weeks ago, actually, with Charles Ossman next on Coast to Coast Live. This is Ian Punnett. Infotech, biotech, nanotech, beard tech. Which one of those best describes you, Charles Ossman?
Probably all of the above, but especially that last one.
Beard tech.
If I could transfer the hair on my beard to the top of my head, I might have something. But I'm happy with what I got.
You're doing all right on the hair of the head thing, it looks like. Better than some, anyway.
Well, it's a changing environment.
I heard that you were digging the St. John Hunt thing. You didn't mind too much getting pushed back
hour. As a matter of fact, when I first walked in the door, some friends of mine are over in the city actually working with the Burning Man folks, which is kind of cool because they're doing like a Green Man. That's what they're playing on. So I walked in the door in kind of a big hurry. I first turned on the stream, and the first thing I heard were these Star Wars sex jokes. And I thought, that's interesting. And then went from that to a very serious discussion about Kennedy and E. Howard Hunt, and I'm thinking, that's pretty eclectic. And then we're going to be talking about the fate of life in this planet. I thought, this is a coast-to-coast show.
It's pretty much
kind of qualifies,
Yeah, I think so. I think this is – and if you think about it, in a way, since I started – on this forum, and I was reading all these lines, and for whatever reason, just kind of coincidentally, Cinemax has been showing all of the Star Wars movies in the last month or so. So now, ever since this whole thing started about Star Wars lines that sum up your sex life, I'm just sitting here watching Star Wars movies, cracking up through the whole thing because every line now.
There's a whole different layer of consciousness one can apply.
Exactly. I can't stop it. All right. So I find your career fascinating, and I've been looking forward to this conversation. First of all, how are you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling great. And first of all, let me profoundly apologize to all of the Coast to Coast listeners and to the Coast to Coast staff. When Lisa called me middle of the week, I was kind of funky, but sort of thought I could just tough it out, take some vitamins, and I'd be okay. Saturday morning was looking a little more dubious. Midday, it got really bad. But what's really interesting is that Easter Sunday was when it was truly the worst. I mean, I was under blankets and sweating. Now, the last time we were on the air, we got to a little bit of a discussion about fundamentalism, and sort of you were sort of defending the Amish and things of that nature as a kind of a positive side.
Defending the Amish.
I thought maybe I'm atoning or paying some kind of atonement for my previous doubting of your thoughts. So I don't know. I'm not sure.
No. I'm sure it's not divine. Although I'll say this, though, and I think this was interesting. As it turned out, it was quite – I don't know if you heard what happened after you couldn't go on last Saturday night. I took a few calls from people who were very interesting and willing to kind of jump in for a few minutes while we tracked down somebody that had been on my bean before that, Charles Pellegrino, one of the co-archaeologists in the Jesus tomb thing.
Interesting. Okay.
It was. And it turned out he was sitting around working on the latest research that had come in on some of the ossuaries that they had found in this tomb. And he's like, sure, I'll give you 2.5 hours. So we did the rest of the show with him.
Well, and it worked out, and it seems like a very good fit. So everything fits together to a larger design strategy. That's how I see it.
Well, then, is that how it's going to remain in the future? That's a good question.
The design strategy is in a perpetual state of morphology. And our challenge, in fact, I hope to bring up this topic later. If you notice in the questions I sent you, the very last one, I sort of tapped into this idea of what I call spiritual intelligence. And that's kind of a word I just threw together. But what I'm hoping to convey is this idea that we're being pushed to see beyond the four dimensions that we're sort of confined to with our current sensory systems. I really believe that.
Well,
and so to be able to cognize this kind of larger holographic infrastructure, that's what we're being trained to do. And if we get that far, that's kind of the big question. But if we get that far, that would be the next big rung on the evolutionary ladder.
Well, we'll certainly get to that part of the conversation. Let me ask of I was curious to see what you're paying attention to in the news. What's captured your ear and your eye? What are you seeing through the Charles Ossman lens these days?
Through the fisheye lens of Charles Ossman. Well, the thing that really got my attention, of course, was Project Blue Brain, the very first thing I posed to you on my list of questions. And you're probably thinking, okay, what the heck is that? Well, I have to give a little bit of background, so if you can just give me 30 seconds to kind of
fill in.
About almost exactly 10 years ago, almost to within, say, a month and a half, it was in early June of 97 when I was at Stanford at the Genetic Programming 97 conference, which was a really big deal at that time. And I had the extreme pleasure, and I just got to meet one of my ultimate people that I've respected for many years, Hugo de Garis, who flew over from England to give a talk at this giant conference, and he was the star attraction. I was wandering around the Stanford campus trying to find the appropriate building, and here, out of the complete blue, this guy walks up, and it turns out he's Hugo de Garis. And so we started sitting down and talking. And the reason I bring him up is because he's the person who's probably credited, really, for having developed the first ever self-evolving artificial brain. I'm not kidding. This is actually a project that was funded about 10 years ago. So we ended up actually sitting in the Stanford Chapel listening to organ music for a couple hours, because it turns out he's quite a fan of organ music. And we got into this very complicated discussion about consciousness and harmonics and how different frequencies can affect state of mind. I mean, really esoteric stuff. But then we eventually got into this discussion about the concept of self-evolving neural networks and self-evolving artificial life-like systems and what that would mean to our civilization in the future. And he had just written a paper where he described in some detail this concept of kind of like a global civil war, but not a war based on territory or traditional sort of geopolitical assets, but rather a war based on access. And by access, he was talking about two types of people, the Cosmans and the Terrans. And not to go into a long lecture, but the whole idea was the Terrans were the folks who were going to be stuck with a kind of a very meat and potatoes kind of lifestyle, just trying to eke out an existence on the planet. And the Cosmids were the select few who were allowed to have access to this sort of ultra-consciousness that was the byproduct of this global-scale artificial brain. And this was the thesis this guy had just published. In fact, that was part of his prepared talk for the day. See, here I had a chance to actually intercept this guy who I'd been studying for years, and it was like, you know, talking to God almost. I thought, how strange. And now we're almost exactly 10 years later, within a handful of weeks, and Project Blue Brain just came online. In fact, I just woke up, as they say. This is the latest version of this kind of a system. It's what's now being commonly called cognitive computing. And the whole idea is to create computing platforms that don't just grind through code and go do a bunch of calculations, but things that really mimic life in a truly physiological kind of way. And this latest project just came to life last week in Switzerland. So it's kind of interesting. I have watched this process evolve over 10 years, and we're seeing kind of that scenario kind of unfold. Maybe not quite as dramatic or as graphic as he had portrayed it, but certainly there is this dividing line coming up. And I think that we're at the very edge, the very cusp of being poised to enter into an era where there will be some who will have access to the next genre of life forms, which are non-human but are part of our infrastructure, and the rest of the general population will probably never have any connection to this stuff at all, or very little. So, I mean, that's kind of, I'm actually seeing this as we speak. So that was kind of one of the things I wanted to bring up.
No, the idea of the Cosmids and the Terrans, do I have that right? Cosmids,
yeah,
and
yeah,
Terrans?
Yeah.
That sounds distinctly H.G. Wells.
Well, those were his terms. And, in
right,
fact, he talked, his description of the actual superintelligences, he called them the Artilects. And the whole idea was this sort of symbiotic evolution between the Artilects and the humans who were designed or able to do so. And there would be this dividing line. And what's interesting is if you go backwards a handful of years, a number of folks in various areas of politics and philosophy have talked about the digital divide and how people are being separated not by wealth but by access. And so in a way, this actually is sort of coming true. It's something that's moving very fast. And the reason I like to go on the air is because I feel like I'm allowed the chance or the privilege to provide to the listening folks on Coast to Coast and whoever else is interested a kind of a snapshot into a world that they probably don't see in their daily lives. Most people,
you know, and let me just say, Charles Osman, interviewing you actually is a chance.
Well, I haven't accused the worst, but no, it's true. I mean, I really feel like Marco Polo from a different dimension set or something, and I try my very best, because a lot of people, most people, you know, I mean this in a very kind way, are really just trying to get by. They're trying to pay their mortgages and raise their kids and keep their job going, you know, that kind of stuff. And so they don't really
right.
have a lot of time to digest these extremely esoteric topics. And you, by the way, you were mentioning PhysOrg, which is one of my favorite sites as well.
Yeah, isn't it the best?
It's a wonderful site. So I'm going to offer you another one. Complexity Digest.
Complexity Digest.
If you want to delve into the really fringe frontiers of just how things are all fitting together, it's probably one of the best sites you're going to find, where you get to actually see not just very interesting technical articles, but also philosophical treatises on how these things actually are merging together. It's a pretty good snapshot of this genre of thought.
Is it a .com, .net, .org?
Yeah, it's a .com.
.com. All right. Well, how do I avoid becoming a Terran? Because Terran sounds like it sucks. I don't want to be a Terran. The way it's described, Terran sounds really boring.
It does, and this is going to become a very dicey discussion because we're going to tap into some things which are probably not going to be very friendly. But I just convey what I see, not defending
right.
any argument or thesis. I'm just saying
okay.
this is what I see.
But if cosmids are going off this way or Artilex are heading off this way, which sounds interesting and fun and doesn't involve a lot of heavy lifting, the Terrans over here sound like going off into kind of the future mole people or something. It doesn't sound good.
Well, and here's actually what is happening. You may remember, this was a couple of years ago, the Texas Academy of Science, it sounds like an oxymoron, but actually it's a very good institution. They had a conference, and there was an Indian fellow whose name I can't pull off the top of my head. I was trying to pull up my notes here when I walked in the door. But he made some headlines when he made this statement that said that we had already crossed the point of sustainability equilibrium back in the mid-80s. And in fact, if you look at a lot of very complex but very interrelatable sets of numbers and different phenomena that are going on, he's kind of more or less right in the sense that the carrying capacity of the planet, the ability to support X number of people, not just in terms of physical goods and services, but the economic systems, jobs and financial sustainability, as well as technical and physical sustainability, all these lines on a graph are sort of now crossing this threshold where it's sort of spiraling downward. And his basic thesis was, well, look, we can do the best we can to use technology, including nanotechnology, to have less of an impact on the planet, distribute the resources more carefully, have a more balanced approach to how we manage our populations in the future. But the reality is, even if we can't go back to what the population status was, say, back in the mid-80s, if we don't curve or slow down or in some way reach a plateau that's within manageability in our accelerating populations today, then that's probably going to be the number one negative driver that's going to probably prevent life from flourishing in a way that would be more pleasant.
The population?
Yes.
Okay. This came up actually a couple of weeks ago. We were having a conversation about this with Frosty Woolridge, and he was making some points, and there was one of those that was offered counter to him was something that somebody said on the phone, which Frosty had kind of dismissed out of hand, but a bunch of people did the math on later on, and son of a gun, they're right. Did you know that you could fit everybody in the planet, right now, on the planet, you can fit them all in Texas?
Oh, yeah, with a cubicle of so many square feet. I've actually heard that before, but here's the idea.
It's true. I mean, like, really, we're...
No, it's true, but here's where I would like to offer the counter response. It's not how many people can you fit into a physical area. It's the impact they have on the planetary resource base and the support mechanisms that provide those resources. And if you begin to look at this carefully, distribution of water, distribution of food, distribution of energy, population densities being packed together into ever tighter circumstances, which leads to social decay and unrest and lots of things that we can go into more detail if we wish. But in other words, if you run all these numbers, and believe me, there are myriad piles of facts and figures one can digest and experiments and models and everything else, it's not how closely can you space the people. It's what is the carrying capacity of the planet to make life something that resembles a pleasant life for the people you have.
Oh, I get that. I guess I had just sort of conceptually, I would have thought that was nearly impossible until somebody did the math on it. And I thought, well, okay, all right, that's kind of interesting. Let me ask you about people who had been making predictions before, and this was popular in the 70s, and I was still a teenager, but I remember getting all these, articles.
Oh, yeah, Paul Ehrlichman and the Population Bomb briefing.
Yeah, all that stuff.
I have the book here on my shelf. I look at it constantly. Now, I mean, of course, I think that in many cases, the early predictors, because they didn't have as complete of a model to work with. See, in the world of futurism, and I actually wear several hats. Futurism is like one of the hats, but that in that context, we walk a kind of a strange, fuzzy line between what we can define as already in-hand data that we can compare to, and then models that are based on the data we've collected and the phenomena that we're aware of, and then try to extrapolate forward. And then, of course, obviously, the further forward you go, the fuzzier those models get. And one of the real nemesis in this kind of prediction process is the chaos that gets into the picture. In a linear system, you can just progress and scale up, and it keeps replicating the same way. But in a chaotic system, the exact opposite happens. And even a very slight alteration to the threads that you were hoping to outline will, of course, start to deviate and create their own patterns and, change the whole model. So for folks back in Ehrlichman's time, back in the late 70s, they were working with the best set of models they could work with, given given the kind of resources and data they were able to look at to sort of base those models.
Well, stop right now, though. But why is that different now? Guys are working with the exact same kind of restrictions. You're working with the best that you have now.
Because the data and the actual measured phenomena that we can now look at have been actually changing and accelerating even to a pace different than what was known then. And so the kinds of limitations that he visualized in terms of how the world would come to an end if a population crossed X was kind of based on technology of the time and economic systems of the time. And, of course, those are in a state of flux. So what I'm trying to suggest to you is that these are not hard, rigid boundary points. And, yes, people have heard this before, and they're going, oh, yeah, it's just anomalies, it's crazy guys. But, in fact, this time around, because the population growth is so much faster and because the impact on the planetary resource and sort of infrastructure is so much more extreme and the climate change that's being affected by this to a certain degree, these are all phenomena that can only be speculated on before, but now I think we have a better set of tools to work with to kind of narrow this down a little bit.
Okay. So if you were to draw a line in terms of, where we are now to where things are going to be in trouble, where do you put it?
I would say if we can't reverse the trends of unlimited, unchecked population growth matched against climate change, resource consumption, and what I would call permanent scarring of the planetary support infrastructure, and I mean consumption of non-renewables and that kind of thing.
Right.
By the year 2020 to maybe 2025, that somewhere in that vein is going to be the absolute threshold of a crossover where something drastic will probably happen. It could be an outbreak of a global pandemic. It could be a collection of things, including really drastic climate changes and so on. But the planet will tend to try to reverse the trend to the best of its ability. And as evolutionary systems tend to indicate, when it reaches a certain threshold where the whole system's about to implode, some kind of correction does, in fact, take place.
Now, I'm not saying you're saying this, but it sounds almost, when people say that it implies that the world ecosystem is sentient.
I would not go as far as saying sentient, although, I understand, and it's a metaphor that I sort of, in a very rough way, kind of look at. Sentience tends to suggest self-awareness, a thinking being that actually calculates and predetermines its next pattern of response. It may not be quite that, but certainly there's a set of conditions in place which, once those conditions get pushed to a far enough extreme, some kind of corrective response does step in and try to correct for it. That would be absolutely the case.
Well, and I would, just trying to follow that line of logic, I might suggest that what that is really just a matter of odds. The longer the one system goes on the way it is, the greater the odds are that something's going to come along and crash it.
And that is a very fair statement, and I would say that as you push the odds become more extreme. It's not a linear path. It's a logarithmic path.
Right.
And that's why I'm so concerned.
Right. And I'm so concerned because that's about as much as I remember about logarithms. That's all I remember about.
Instead of straight lines. But
yeah, that's all I remember.
On the slides that I – and by the way, I really want to thank Lex and Sean once again. The web guys at Coast to Coast are great.
Yep.
Every time I go in the air, I'm always pushing at them to put more stuff up, and they're really good. They're incredibly good guys.
Very good.
One of the slides, I think it's the fourth slide, I have a picture. It says time, sort of the ultimate pressure point, and you see this population chart down there, this I think slide number four. And this is just to, in a very simplistic way, show the rate of change of this almost vertical spike where the population growth is essentially unchecked. And unless people voluntarily can come to a different way of recognizing how they see their position as people on this planet, and this circles back to your vision of the Terrans versus the Cosmids, we're all sort of doomed to be Terrans, or the vast majority of us. Whereas if we can take a more balanced, managed approach to how we look at the equilibrium of this planetary support system, then I would say that a much larger percentage of population can, in fact, live a life that looks like the Cosmids. That was kind of what I was trying to get at.
Charles Zossman, not just a radio guest, but also a PowerPoint presentation on coasttocoastam.com. Hope you enjoy the Danish. They're over there by the table. Just take a seat. We've provided pencil and paper there for everybody in their seats, and we'll come back with more. We'll start, I think, right where we were kind of in the middle on something else, because I want to see a little bit more about what things are going to be like in the next few years. What can I plan on for both me and for My Kids next with futurist Charles Osman on Coast to Coast Live.